States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, Sarah Martin has a training tip. We have an extract from the L Program Committee meeting at last year's annual convention, and the concluding part of the presentation by Kirsten Johnson on equine rehabilitation and preventative care. But first, we have one item of news this week. The USEF has appointed George Williams to serve as the US Dressage Youth Coach and Charlotte Bradall-Baker as the Assistant Dressage Youth Coach, both pending contract negotiations. George is the current USDF president and has brought numerous horses and riders up through the levels. Charlotte is a well-known trainer and FEI judge. She won a team bronze medal at the 1992 Barcelona Olympic Games and a team silver medal at the 1997 North American Championships. You can find the full press release and more information about George and Charlotte on our website at usdf.org. And now for part two of the education session taken at the 2013 Adequan USDF Annual Convention entitled Equine Rehabilitation and Preventative Care. The presenter, Kirsten Johnson, is owner of the Kentucky Equine Sports Medicine and Rehabilitation Center.
I always take into consideration the entire horse. I have probably 10 farriers I work with. I have chiropractors. We look at the horse's discipline. All of these things, though, are the choice of the owner or the veterinarian. I mean, I might make a suggestion, but at the end of the day, I don't take over a case. The case belongs to the attending veterinarian. The diet, the feet, dental work, all those things are important, but I find with your population, it's not an issue. For the last 25 years, have spent my life working with veterinarians from all over the country, injured horses, and have pretty much seen the gamut come and some of it go. And when it comes to chiropractic care, acupuncturists and physiotherapists, I'm so glad that it's becoming more of a solid part of the horse's care, because I can tell you from experience, when you have the right people applying those therapies, it can make a profound difference. You know, when you watch a horse have a quality professional do chiropractic care, when you are around the horses like I am and you see the significant difference in these horses, you know there's no placebo. They don't fake it. They either hurt or they feel better. There is no way. And acupuncture done correctly, I have a gal that comes in and does acupuncture and chiropractic care at the same time. I think there's real room for that. I just cannot say enough in the healing process. After a horse has had surgery, I don't know if you guys have ever watched what they do to these horses, but how they cannot need to be adjusted is beyond me. When you hang these huge, massive creatures upside down and they're relaxed, and I mean, they're out cold while you're doing all this. I mean, they can't just stand up and be perfect. It's not the surgeon's fault. It's no one's fault. But it is a situation, I feel, that sometimes there's a missing component with putting that horse back together, because they have to have the surgery. That's not it. It's just that it's really, I think it's hard. And the bigger they are, the tougher it is on them. You know, the adjunct therapies, the hyperbaric oxygen chamber is, you know, we have many uses for it at our facility, and the attending can decide. The saltwater spa, the therapies we've talked about. You know, I deal with a lot of airway issues in racehorses extensively, with bleeders and upper airway and lower airway problems. And I don't know, with you guys' population of horses, you've got to have allergy horses. You have to have horses that at certain times of the year you go to bridle them and they are not the same as they are at other times of year. It has to be. Because if you think about the mechanics of a throat, and if it's inflamed because they have allergies, 65% of horses that bleed on the racetrack are allergy-driven, okay? So it's an issue. That inflammatory thing is an issue. So although you guys don't have to have the air that a racehorse has to have, you have another issue because you're putting them in a frame and in a place that can be disrupted with inflammation in that throat. And so I think that there are ways, instead of plowing through it and punishing him for something they feel, I have come across the FlexiNeb nebulizer. I just think if you have a major barn and you don't have one of these that you use with your veterinarian, I think It is one of the greatest tools. If you know you have an allergy horse, there are things that you can do naturally. You can nebulize and keep these airways a whole lot better. It's not about throwing them on a med, unless the vet thinks it's necessary, but it is about maintaining these horses so you're not punishing them at a time that they're just telling you it doesn't feel the same. They don't know why. Hey, by the way, when you put my throat here, that's really painful. They can't tell you that. All they can do is not do something in the way that they did before. So this is something that the FlexiNeb for respiratory problems, I have used it on pneumonia horses with the veterinarians when we put them on around, like if you have a bad pneumonia, hopefully you never do, but it happens to everyone that's in this long enough. You put them on a long round of antibiotics, and then you've got to switch for whatever reason, and now you're thinking, oh my God, I cannot take a chance of flipping the gut. You know, what about the GI tract? And you're all panicked. You can nebulize these antibiotics now. They recently did a project at Haggard's. We know that it gets really far back. It's got great penetration, and it works really well. Again, that is along with your veterinarian, of course. But there are some great, great ways to utilize this nebulizer in the training setting as well to keep horses maintained when they are an allergy horse. The hay gain hay steamer, I deal with a lot of allergy horses. That's why they come my way. And the hay gain has been a great way post-surgically on throats. These horses that you have respiratory issues with, the horses that you are dealing with allergies, this is a great way. Also, if you think about when a horse is on a van, the research has already been done that after 5 hours of a horse's head up, the bacteria in their throat doubles. So when you put a horse on a plane or on a van and their head's up and they can't put it down, the bacteria doubles in their throat. So you've got a perfectly healthy horse right now. Let's say you have a horse that has some allergy and they're inflamed anyway, you know, and they're on a plane or they're on, you know, on a van going somewhere and they can't put their head. You've just left that horse susceptible to picking up more bugs, just like me when I have my allergies and somebody has a cold, I'm going to get it quicker than the person that isn't. The hay gain gives you an opportunity. If you can put steamed hay in front of them instead of dry hay, you've taken the dust and all of that garbage out so that they have clean air. All about just adding safety nets for the health of your horse, not just when they're at my place, but I'm giving you the information on the things that I have come across that I think are important. And the hay gain is a great option. And they also, I think they love it because it smells like a cookie. Pretty cool. And they like it. You know, working with your veterinarian, progressing at the correct pace for each horse, no cookie cutter approach. We work very individually. Progression through different controlled exercise programs and therapies. Applying them in the right order is probably the most important. And really having a conversation with the veterinarian and a plan, because he's going to have his therapies in line. I have horses that swim, that are in the saltwater spa, that go on the vibrating platform. They have more, they're engaged more than you think, and a whole lot more than if they're just stall bound. Soft tissue injuries do a lot better with us because although they can't get out and do a lot, we put them in a place that's close to the spa. They can get in the spa every day. They can stand on that platform. They can go back into their stall. And then we feed for the nutrition, not for the energy. You know, we watch the energy levels very carefully, too. I feed tribute feeds. I have a really good range of feeds that help me to keep those energy levels correct for that individual. But you have to fuel them. I mean, you can't starve a horse and expect them to heal. And everybody's first thing you're told is cut back on their grain. Well, of course, you have to cut back. But it's not about cutting back. It's about giving them something that will fuel their body to heal, but that won't set them up to have too much energy. And that's important, too. And utilizing different therapies vary greatly depending on each horse's needs. The final examination and the final evaluation, everyone has a different expectation of what they want when they get their horse back. Someone that is, you know, going up and down the road and has to travel a lot, everybody has a different need of what they need that horse to be at the level that horse needs to be when they get them back. It's an individual program about working with the trainers and the veterinarians as to what their expectation is. Number one, what's the final expectation? And number two, how fit do you want this horse when he returns to your care? How much do you want? And everybody has a different feeling about that, and that's okay. it's just getting to the point that that individual is safe when they go home to move on forward into the training program. So it's not about getting them dead fit to go compete. It's about getting them to a point that you can take them home, and every time you get on their back, you're not in a state of panic. Some horses go home and actually are turned out. And some horses, we maintain a level of conditioning, we don't increase, and some horses, because of the injury, they need to be increased. So some horses will swim the set amount, and we don't make it any more than that. But as we get from point to point, it's a steady increase in exercise. When the rider gets on them and starts tack walking, they don't stop going in the water. There you go. Now you've got the loading part of it that you're taking care of at the proper time in the healing process, whether it be soft tissue or whatever it is. So every horse is an individual, and like I said, it's a key to get them back to you in a way that you're not panicked at what the horse is going to do when he gets home and filling that gray area. Conditioning as preventative care. It's been a really wild ride, this work that I've done. But in the last 2 years, I have seen in the last year and a half a change that I never, ever really thought I would see. And that is horses coming to my facility that have nothing wrong. Trainers, I have people that go on vacation. And I had one lady, she had 4 dressage horses, and she was going on a cruise for 2 weeks. So she sent them to me, and we put them in the water, and we did what we had to do. And we got their exercise, and she came home, and she couldn't have been happier. Because all these horses had had a break, but they hadn't lost their conditioning. And when she got on them, they were like so happy to go back to work. The Hackney ponies, I asked him if I could have a quote, and he said, no. I said, well, why not? He said, because I don't want anybody to know what I'm doing. This is working. Let them all do it. They hadn't figured it out. I'm not going to tell them. It's kind of a small world, those Hackney. I had a Grand Prix jumper, had a tough, tough summer. He was on his way to Europe. He came, spent 10 days with me. All he did was go in the hyperbaric chamber. I gave his groom a week off, or 10 days off too. He was so thrilled because the grooms come with these horses, as I'm sure they do with some of yours. But the grooms can come, of course, if you want to send a groom, if you have a horse of that level. We have no problem with that. The groom can come, set up the feed, do whatever they want. But this horse went in the chamber 10 times and went in the saltwater spa every day, was hand-walked, and went on to Europe and did extremely well. It was kind of a refreshing before he got on the plane to go over there. I had Wise Dan. He got beat at Keeneland before going to the Breeders' Cup. He was Horse of the Year last year. He trains at Keeneland, so he came in and out of my place before he got on the plane to go to California to defend his title. And the rest is history. He went and he won, and it was really, really fun, and he's a great horse. But we have a lot of those kind of horses now. I have a lot of horses that have nothing wrong with them. They come in for conditioning. You don't find football players laying on the couch in the off season, because once you lose conditioning on these older horses, it's really hard to get it back. So, if you have a horse that you want to give time off, I think that quality time off is crucial. But if there was a way that we could incorporate different kinds of time off that we could keep them sounder for a longer period of time, I guess that's the point of it all. We know, too, after 10 hyperbaric treatments, on the human after 20, you increase natural stem cell production 8-fold. It takes about half the treatments on a horse in any condition. So that's where I came up with the 10 treatments. And I can tell you across the board, I've been doing hyperbarics. I've got 10,000 treatments in the chamber I have at the farm now. I had 3 chambers before that. 10 treatments is a magic number. And it really does stimulate the immune system. And it really does help these horses. Because when a horse is really fit, they're immunosuppressed. The fitter a horse is, the more they're immunosuppressed at that point, because their body has had to react differently to different kinds of inflammations and such. So the hyperbarics is a way to recover these horses that are still moving forward, and it's a way to recover them in a healthy, proactive way and not wait for them to be injured. There's a new laser right now that there's a couple vets in town that have that I've seen some really positive responses from a standpoint of the healing of some of these tendons. I'm always looking for new things. There has been some work recently. It's been done on the racehorses, but I'm really excited to see it move forward into performance horses and its inflammatory parameters in the blood that you can pull throughout the training process. When do you see a spike? What does that spike mean? We aren't there yet, but those are the kind of exciting things that I see in the future. I want to see us. I don't want horses to have to come to me because they're broken. I want horses to come to me because they need a break.
And now we have an extract also from the 2013 Adequan USDF annual meeting about the L program, which was recorded during an L program committee meeting. Lois Eukins introduces Marilyn Heath.
We're going to start with Marilyn speaking about what it's like to be a faculty person, how she feels about the program. So here's Marilyn.
Thank you, Lois. It is a real treat and a real honor to be a member of the L program faculty. It's such a great program. It is a requirement as a prerequisite for entering the small R program for USEF licensing. But over and above that, it is a huge educational program for everyone. Whether you're a rider or a trainer or a parent or just a spectator, it is very helpful for everyone to know what things look like from the judge's point of view. Gives such insight into understanding the test sheet once it's picked up at the secretary's office and the comments are read and the numbers are read. And it's just so enlightening to get the judge's point of view. It makes understanding the ride so much easier. We have evaluations that are sent in by the organizers, filled out by the candidates after each session. And I'd just like to share with you some of the comments from those evaluations. From the DVCTA program, it is a great program, very informative for any competitor, and excellent education for future judges. I would strongly recommend it. Also from the DVCTA, do these sessions more often or have similar information intended for the wider community. I think anyone who trains a horse for dressage should have this information. I can't see why this excellent biomechanics presentation should not be presented to a wider audience. This would be helpful to all levels of competitors and trainers. Now, you do need to understand that each session can be done as a standalone session. So if one does not want to organize an entire L program, through the continuing education at USDF, a biomechanics session can be organized, or the B or the C. So they are available as standalone. From GDCTA, Georgia, in my opinion, the L program has enlightened me and helped me be a better teacher. It is my hope to pursue judging as far as the program allows. I take pride that the USDF has formed a program admired around the world. And we all take pride in that. Then from VADA, nicely evolving program, especially from when I took it 7 years ago. Very impressed with the direction this program is taking and how it affects the sport as a whole. These are wonderful accolades. We thank you for these comments. I thoroughly enjoyed all aspects of the program, and I particularly appreciate the help and encouragement provided by all instructors. And finally, the L program will make any instructor or rider better at their craft. It is worth auditing for every single dressage rider, trainer, instructor, coach, and judge. I will continue with my education because it makes me better at all these responsibilities. Now, just a few minutes ago, I met an L graduate, and she was telling me of her experience. Kathy Jacobs, would you share what you told me?
I just finished the L program in September last year, and we graduated from out of Lexington. And I really was scared being the first time being an L graduate, and I got a couple of jobs right off the bat. This year, I've been so well accepted as a judge. I've learned so much. My eye is so much better. I ride better. I understand so much more. And I think it's a program that I've said from the day one, anyone riding beyond first level needs to go through this program. The instructors were absolutely encouraging, and the information is so valuable for everyone at all levels of competition. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Kathy. Is there anyone else that would like to add to that?
Ida's auditing, and she's a senior judge, very experienced, good senior judge. She audited my program. Wow, I'm honored. But you want to say something?
Thank you, that's sweet of you. I was at the first session with Bill, the biomechanics, and then Lois, session B, and organizer Sally Davenport out of the NEDA, and this is Region 8, and they've just begun their program. And I was thinking to have a couple of weekends off. And then I said, you know, this is running in my own region. I can get to this, and this is so worthwhile. It doesn't matter how long you've been judging. The review is really important. The information is thorough. These presentations that you all are doing, it's amazing, the quality of them. They're not boring. They're good. They're quick. You can see there's a lot of short video clips to help us. So we would begin to talk about something. They would whip out their video clips, and we would have a lot of them. You didn't have three horses to compare. They had the potential to have 15 or 20 horses for us to compare. That doesn't mean we did, but we had the potential. I thank you for that thoroughness, and I am very impressed. And I've told all my colleagues, I had last been involved in running one for MDS in 2003, and that was my last thorough time of being at all the sessions, and we've got to keep coming. And I will. I'll keep coming because the information changes. So thank you. Good job.
It was just so cool to have quite a few judges, already L graduates. Yep. It was wonderful. And Lyndon Gray was there for so far the first two weekends, and I think she plans to come for the third. That really is great. So yep. Bill has something to say. These are like testimonials, aren't they?
I always like to share this story. The L candidates and graduates are sitting with us oftentimes at the shows because it's a requirement for them, and they're scribing for us. And I got intimidated by them because they knew more than I did. And so I thought, I got to learn this program. I'm not going to get left behind. And I'll have to say to any judge that's out there, if you don't come on board here, you will be left behind.
Absolutely. I really think that it's important for anyone who hasn't been through it, who is a judge that hasn't been through it, to at least audit the program. It's just, I can't say enough about it. It's just wonderful. So thank you, Lois, and thank you, everybody.
Now, Trina, yeah. You and Sharon want to kind of do this. This is some of the magic you two can do from your home.
How many of you were candidates in, say, 2006 or before? So you all remember your binders that you purchased for $75 or more. The problem is we were having some trouble keeping things more up to date. So what we've done in just this last year, Sharon has worked really hard to put up a separate private website for L participants at this point, and graduates are also welcome to participate and come back and update their material. When you become a participant and you've paid your money, you get into this particular website, which gives you all of the information that you're going to need to know before you go off to go to your first A session. That includes a glossary of terms, a checklist, and perhaps we would look at links to a USEF piece of information that's very valuable, like the equipment handout catalog. And then you're wanting to go to session A, and before session A, you would click that link, and it takes you to a thing that tells you exactly what you need to do before you go to session A. In this case, we've decided at one point that we needed to get it streamed down just a little bit, so we put part of our biomechanics of the parts in a video and let you watch it as many times as you like. At the session itself, we do a little more discussion about what it actually looks like. We have video examples and all. But this also gives you all the important parts of information that we were using before. And there's a little exam online quiz afterwards. And before you go to the A session, you also have a rules homework, which is an open book. And when you take the test, we now do the test online. And after you do the quiz, you will get your results and then also the correct answers. That helps you in the future. And then we discuss that at the meeting. For each of these sessions, it's really well laid out how you can get the information. We're going to keep streamlining this and getting it to the point where even as an approved judge that you could go back and say, okay, I'd like to see what is now being taught in the A session, biomechanics, and what the candidates or the participants are getting in the handouts. And then we do this for A, B, C, and D. And then eventually at part two, you will also have additional information as you go into the evaluation part. We also have a lot of good links to different eTrack information, which is very valuable if you don't have to be on this website to get to it.
There's really quite a lot on eTrack. Anything that you're looking for that you used to find on the USCF website, like the glossary of judges' terms, the judges' checklist, guide for scribes, all that stuff is now on eTrack. So you can search it by the item. There's a lot of practice. You can use the on-the-level test to practice judging. You can mute it, play it back. So a lot of options there.
Okay. Sally, do you want to say a few things?
For the organizers, I'm sure we all have our own way of going about organizing these clinics. But no matter what, for new organizers, you need a competent team to divide up the work so that you don't go crazy. And I've run a couple now of the L program part ones all the way through, and I'll have about four part twos by the time I finish next year. We've found, Anita, that of the 30 who sign up as participants, almost all want to go ahead and go to the part two, which is difficult, and I'm sure other organizers are finding this as well. They're very enthusiastic, but once you go to a part two, only 10 can be accepted in any one part two program, which is why we run a part one for 30, and I get at least another 30 auditors. And then for the part twos, I'll have a part two immediately following the part one, and then a second year, another part two, and then start all over again with another part one. Does everything always go smoothly? No. But if you have a good team, things work.
My question is about the finances. If we, as an organizer, we want to do a part one and a part two, how you sort of distribute that? Do you sort of plan on using some of your funds from part one and helping part two because we have a 30 participants compared to a 10?
Yes. And then for the final, of course, you have two instructors with their fees and their expenses. So what we did for part two is I budgeted to break even. NIDA's good, their whole mission is education, so if I ran over a bit, I was not going to get horsewhipped by my organization for going over budget. But you try really hard to budget at least a zero balance. I think some of the other groups have had to use some of their money from part one. If you have a very active group where you do get your 30 auditors as well as your 30 participants, you are going to make a bundle and use some of that money to offset expenses for the part twos. If you're running an L program, you are responsible for it fiscally, whether you make money or lose money. It's important to run the part twos. I can't tell you how many calls and emails I get from people from all over the country the minute a part two is advertised on the website. I could have filled my part two without having any of my own people, and I retain all of my slots for part two for my people who are doing the part one. And then I keep a separate list of those in order who have contacted me from other areas of the country. So if I do need to fill in a spot, I have backup.
Why is part two limited to 10 people?
In part two, they're doing practice judging, so the instructor is working with each of the 10 candidates and has to be able to evaluate.
Yes, those are held at shows, and it's just not possible to do a good job with more than 10.
I just wanted to say that we ran into that problem in Region 1. I was involved with an L program, helped organize it in Fervada, and it was amazing, though, of the 30 candidates, when we were taking it for our part twos, there were a couple people that either said, oh, I really don't think I'm ready for this, or for personal reasons, I have to drop out. So it's a good thing you do have your wait list, because
yes,
you will end up moving to that wait list.
Right.
I know we took like 3 or 4 on our wait list by the time that came by. And then there was so much interest that some of our candidates from the VADA program lobbied a neighboring GMO to put on another part two. So that satisfied them. Answer is that a lot of times you're going to do one part one to two part twos.
Right.
As you can get a feeling, it's a good program. It's fun. It really helps you judge better, ride better, understand training better even. And it's just great. And if you don't want to go through the program, at least come audit it. It's very affordable. It's a program well worth attending.
You can find more information about the L program by clicking on the Education tab on the front page of our website at usdf.org. And also on the website, you'll find a full schedule of educational sessions and other activities that will be held during this year's USDF ADEQUIN Annual Convention, which takes place in Boston, Massachusetts from December the 3rd through the 6th. And finally, our training tip this week, presented by Sarah Martin.
Chris, I've been really focusing a lot lately on nosebands. I travel to teach and I give quite a few clinics. I travel every weekend in the spring and fall. And I've been finding that my whole philosophy of noseband adjustment and tension has been changing. And the sort of the old philosophy that I had was that the best thing for a noseband was for it to be snug, in the way that when you wear glasses, you like to have the glasses sort of snug up against the bridge of your nose, and that in that way, they were the most out of the way. And it's very typical that most dressage horses have the flash noseband attachment. And I just thought, you know, not tight, but be able to keep it quiet against the horse's face. And what I've been finding as I've been experimenting with and changing tensions in nosebands in the horses that I have in training is that allowing that noseband to be a little looser actually allows so much less pole pressure on the pole. And I don't think people realize how much pressure gets put in a downward fashion on the horse's pole when they tighten the broad, thick noseband that goes around the jaw. And so I've just been more aware. There are many more horses now. I just take the flash off completely and then relax the noseband, the large fat part of it, quite a bit, and then lift the crown piece up off the ears so that the horse really does have room in his pole. And I find a great many horses will shake their pole, chew, lick a little bit. That to me is all an indicator that indeed, yes, they did have more pressure in that area than we intended. And obviously for the connection when we're riding, we want that relaxation in the pole. So that's one thing that I've really been noticing and paying more attention to. The other thing is just my concern with the philosophy of what we use a noseband for. And that is that dressage people tend to, or dressage trainers, riders, tend to get very nervous anytime they see a horse react with its tongue. And they think, oh, no, you know, don't let that happen, and put strap the jaw shut and tie the mouth shut. And I don't mean physically tie it shut, but make those straps tight in order to quell the use of the tongue. And what people need to realize is that the tongue is a muscle, and it is demonstrating what's going on in the horse's back. So if the horse needs to stretch their tongue, to move their tongue, if they become active in their tongue, it can be indications of what's going on in the horse's body. And I find it best to let them go through whatever that cycle is. So if it's a young horse who's mouthing the bit, they need to go through the process of mouthing the bit until they get to the stage where they're comfortable and relaxed in the jaw and happy to carry the bit. If it's an older horse who suddenly is showing you something with his tongue, you really need to think about, you know, what's my saddle fit? How are his teeth? Is there something different that I'm doing in my riding style? Have I unintentionally gotten tight? Is my position balanced? That these are ways that the horse has of giving us feedback. And all too often, the panic over, oh my gosh, tongue, causes people to tighten the noseband, which again can then start a whole nother cycle of anxious behavior. And ultimately, any tongue problem, so to speak, is not going to go away until the horse gets to go through that cycle and until the origin problem gets addressed. So basically, I find that I've been taking flashes off. I've been riding with a regular noseband, which is what you end up with in a double bridle anyway. And I've been just much, much softer in my approach around nosebands and observations of any tongue issues that may be going on in order to really figure out what the source of the issue is.
Our thanks again to Sarah for this week's training tip. And a reminder that this podcast is available for download from the iTunes Store to your podcast apps on your smartphone. And don't forget to visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education at usdf.org. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.